What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson. Let's get this started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 27. On this week's podcast, we're going to be talking about intermittent fasting. That's kind of a buzzword nowadays. A lot of people are talking about it, so we just want to do a little deep dive and show you why it's so good and why we think a lot of people should be doing it. But first, a little check-in. So, Tom, how's everything been going?
So, I was supposed to do a carnivore diet for about 6 weeks. It lasted a little over four. Once Christmas came, like, you know, there's just way too many sweets and stuff. So, instead of just being on a all-meat and candy diet, I started just going back to vegetables and everything. But I'm still eating probably like 80%, 90% meat for the most part. And all the results I've found from that carnivore diet have pretty much continued. I haven't been, other than that, those couple days where I ate a bunch of cookies and stuff for like Christmas and like the last couple days after Christmas. Other than that, like I've been super clean since then. And I haven't really noticed any of like my cravings coming back. Just my energy level has been through the roof. And I've been, like I lost quite a bit of weight, like especially like fat mass during that carnivore diet. And it kind of crept back from all those sweets, obviously. But after that went away, I'm leaner than I was before Christmas, and I'm just loving all the extra energy and everything. I really think it's a really great elimination style diet.
Oh yeah, me too. Obviously, I love it. Yeah, I started it. I don't know when. It's been years now, I guess. But once I started it, I never really stopped.
Yeah, and I was planning on doing an extended fast for the New Year's, but I ended up drinking a little bit more than expected on New Year's Eve. So New Year's Day, I was hungover. So it was hard to do an extended fast being hungover. Like I needed food. I needed stuff in me.
What are you going to do with 3 days?
I was planning on doing a 3 day, but what I've been doing instead is every day since then has just been one meal a day.
Okay.
And other than New Year's Day, I make sure I get some sort of running in during the morning fasted. And then either while I'm cooking dinner or right after dinner, I've been doing some sort of weight training session just because I have too much energy just to sit still and just watch TV or just go to bed. I don't know. I just have too much energy right now. It's hard for me to even sit down and do this podcast. I want to just move around, do some bicep curls, pull up something.
Just move some heavy shit. Well, that's a good problem to have, man. Everyone else is the opposite. They're too tired to do anything.
Yeah, I know. Or they're lying to themselves. Like, oh, I got energy. I can do this. And then they're going to burn themselves out in a couple weeks.
Yeah. Well, no, that's cool, man. That's good.
Yeah, so what's new with you?
Well, shit, the opposite. I'm fatter than I've ever been. Or at least I feel that way. I was definitely a little more lax through December and been back on track now. Full, like, carnivore, full animal products for, I guess, the past maybe 4 or 5 days. And I feel fine, no problems. I'm excited to start getting leaner again and just to get back in shape. Even though I'm not that out of shape, I guess, right now, but I feel like I am. And I want to talk a little bit about, you remember the name Otto Warburg from our cancer podcast?
Yeah, he was the Warburg effect. Yeah, he's like the OG when it comes to...
OG
the,
cancer guy.
Yeah, the metabolic effect of cancer.
Pretty much figured out the whole game.
Yeah, long time ago.
A long time ago, right? We're talking like World War I. Do you know how gangster he is?
What I just said is about all I know about him.
Right? You picture some... I guess this is going to be kind of stereotypical, but some nerd... chemist in a lab. That's all he did, right?
I'm picturing pretty much Einstein.
Einstein. I'm glad you said Einstein. Okay. So right now I'm reading two books. I'm reading Tripping Over the Truth, which is a book about cancer. And then I'm also reading a book called Power, Sex, and Suicide, which is a book about mitochondria. Because those go hand in hand, if you know it or not. You know what I mean? So when a mitochondria go to shit, that's when everything goes to shit. So I was like, all right, let me read these books. And Tripping Over the Truth had a pretty detailed section on the history of Otto Warburg. Man, that dude was gangster. Super special. Like, what kid growing up is like, I'm going to cure cancer? Who says that?
And cancer wasn't even like the number one killer like it is now.
No.
It wasn't even that big of a deal.
People were still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he was like, oh, I'm going to need a guy to cure cancer. He won a Nobel Prize, was nominated for 4. When World War I popped off, so Germany had this whole, I guess, system set up where if you were like a real stud in your field, like a scientist, they would pretty much come to this university, or I guess this facility, will take care of everything for the rest of your life. You don't have to worry about food. Any research you want, it is paid for. No grants, no nothing.
So, like, what a lot of other countries do for, like, Olympic athletes, they're doing that for their scientists?
Yes, and you wonder why Germany, back in the day, was advanced.
Yeah, no wonder why they're so damn smart and exactly. Took all the entire world.
Took it over, at least tried to, right? So, that's what they did, and out of college, he got offered that. He's like, hey, come here, you'll be taken care of for life. He's like, that's when World War I happened, and he's like, you know what? I need to go fight for my country. That's like, hey, bro, you won the lottery on a Monday, and like, I'm gonna go to Iraq on Wednesday.
Damn.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But he was that type of guy. He's like, no, I'm going to go there. So he went to World War I, fought for years, right? Didn't die. And World War I, if you don't know, that was like trench warfare. I don't know how many dudes died on hills, you know what I mean, just from mortar fire. But it took a letter. Another guy that nobody, I guess everybody knows, is Einstein. Einstein had to write him a letter because he was part of that group in Germany. He was like part of a scientist. He was taken care of. He's like, hey, bro, please come back. Like, you're too special.
You're too valuable.
You're too valuable. And the letter was like, you're not an average man, and you're in a situation where average man can kill you. Like, please come back. And he was like, all right, him and Einstein were boys. So he's like, all right, he came back. And then he came back, crushed cancer, figured it out. No one listened to him. How sad is that?
Damn. I didn't know, like, all that other details about him.
Yeah, but he's gangster.
He's way too valuable to be out on the front lines or something yes, like that. Yes,
exactly. And it was just so upsetting to me that when he died, I mean, it's not as, like, nefarious as, like, John Yudkin and Ansel Keys. Like, that whole history and the cholesterol history, that's, like, corruption. That's, like, that's shady business. This was more just his theory ran up into the discovery of DNA. And once we discovered, like, a double helix in DNA, that's all anyone wanted to talk about. So his theory on the mitochondria, which they were still kind of figuring out, they were like, yo, it's not about DNA, it's not about cancer. So no one listened to him. So he died, and no one believed his theory. And that was his whole life. And he knew he was right. They said until the day he died, he knew he was right. Like, he wouldn't cop to being wrong, because he knew he wasn't wrong. And I was like, man, I really respect that. I really appreciate that, and I really admire that, you know? And I remember I was driving to work, just pissed. How many people know Otto Warburg's name?
Not very many. Not hopefully, very. I don't even know if people that listen to our podcast are even going to remember it, because we just mentioned it like
glanced one sentence. Over it.
Yeah.
I know. How many people know Einstein's name?
Oh, everybody.
Everybody. Does E equals MC squared affect your life?
Maybe. I just don't know how.
Exactly. It doesn't. Sorry. I mean, I'm sure gravity does, let's be honest, but not like cancer. Cancer affects me.
Oh, yeah, it's affecting my life right now.
Exactly, right? Cancer affects all of us. And if people would have just listened to this guy, if people would have just... Somebody would have just took the mantle. We're talking like the 30s, 40s, 50s. Someone just took the mantle and ran with it. Cancer would have been, I don't want to say solved by now, but we wouldn't be poisoning motherfuckers and calling it medicine.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So... I've been thinking about this for days. I've been needing to tell someone.
I'm really surprised you haven't told me before.
I know. It's upsetting to me. And it just made me think how many great people throughout history we don't know about because winners, like, write the history book.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I bet there's so many people out there. I bet there's so many women that we're sure shit not going to know about because they weren't even allowed to take part in shit. You know what I mean?
So I'm sure you know more about this. Was his Did he connect any of this to sugar at all? Like, that's what deranges the metabolism of the
mitochondria? That didn't get brought up, no.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's not even, like, Big Sugar back then would have, like, not. This information ain't getting out.
No, yeah, Big Sugar wasn't even a thing back then.
So it was just like, oh, hey, we discovered DNA. Let's figure out how DNA fits into this.
Yes, exactly. And the people who had that argument were onto something. Because does cancer, I guess, come from mutated DNA? Yeah. Does all these cancer cells that they looked at, did they have fucked up chromosomes? Yeah, but that was a symptom. And that's what he was yelling at. He's like, yo, that is a symptom. And they're like, no, it's not. And he's like, yes, it is. Come look at the mitochondria. And they're like, nah, bro, you're an old man. Time passed you by. Go to bed.
Damn. I mean, you know, it's sad. It's like, that's a lot of other chronic diseases where, like, type 2 diabetes, you know, it's if the mother has it, the father has it, the kids are going to have it. We're all looking at it. Oh, it's got to be genetic. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's just lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Because, like, they all live in the same house. So maybe they're all eating the same shitty diet. And also, like, when the kids move out, all they have is just those influences of that environment that they were living in. Mm-hmm. So, of course, they're going to eat the same thing that they grew up on.
Yeah.
So, it's just kind of crazy how we're trying to make everything genetics when it's... Maybe it is, but there's probably a much simpler solution that we can look at.
Yes, exactly. I know. So, that was upsetting. And I've been really pissed about that for the past few days. I feel like I'm the only guy mad about that right now. But... So be it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what's new with me. And it's honestly very frustrating reading that book. It really bothers me that this whole game was almost figured out. Like, he almost had everything right, and it didn't matter. And now how many people die of cancer? How many people? And now the industry's behind cancer. Now, I mean, good luck trying to change cancer treatment, you know?
I know, and just think of... I mean, like, Dominic DeAugustino and, like, Thomas Seyfried, they're doing a lot of research now.
Studs.
But when we were looking up the whole cancer thing, like, there was a good, like, 70, 80 years where there was just, like, no information.
Yes.
Like, there's a very long huge gap.
Yeah.
And just think of how far we've been able to come along with just all the advances in the technology, especially just how much access we have to all this information. Just think, like, how much more, like, we could have progressed by now.
We should not be where we are now.
Oh, we could be so much further, even if like all that research isn't like mainstream, it would still be so much further advanced in the underground that we live in right now. Mm-hmm.
I know.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. And it's super irritating, and it has nothing to do with intermittent fasting.
Yeah, like, I don't even know how we're going to talk about intermittent fasting now. I'm kind of worked up about that.
Cancer, I know. But, I mean, we are going to talk about autophagy a little bit with intermittent fasting, and that will also assist in just cellular recycling and becoming healthier. And, you know, I'm not going to say preventing cancer, but can help just become a healthier person. So that's something.
Yeah, honestly, all these chronic diseases are all related to each other. So the cure, or I guess easing the symptoms, they're all going to have a very similar response. Like, it's not that what's going to help your diabetes will also help your heart disease. Because what caused them is basically the same thing.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great point. That's good. So let's get into it. So exactly, what is intermittent fasting?
Just to put it simply, it's just time-restricted eating. Like, so for example, you might eat your first meal at 10 and then your last meal at 6. So that's a very, like, basic protocol. It's a 16 hours fasted, 8 hours feeding. That's what we put most of our clients on if they're able to handle it. If they can't, then we might start them at 12-12 or, like, a 14-10. Just to put it simply, like, it's just don't eat all the time.
Yes, if you wake up eating and go to bed eating, that's a problem. Like, there's nothing normal about that. And that this is the only time in history where that's even possible.
Yeah, so can you see in the dark?
No, I cannot see in the dark.
Do you think our ancestors could see in the dark?
No. Mm-mm.
Do you eat your food in the dark?
Does anyone?
So, like, is it a pretty... I mean, I think it's pretty safe to assume that our ancestors ate when the sun was out. So that's a natural form of just intermittent fasting.
Yes.
We've been doing that, like, any carnivore is going to be doing that, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're either a nocturnal creature, or they eat during the day, one or the other.
Yeah.
Like, no creature's out there 24 hours awake just killing stuff all the time. Thank God, because that would be a scary creature.
That would be scary. Oh, man, that really would be scary. But that's a great little, that's a point that I honestly never even considered until you talked about it, but... Just think right now, it's winter where we are, around 5 o'clock, it's getting dark.
And the sun's not really coming up till maybe 7, and that's like that first little peak of sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by the time it's actually bright enough for you to really see what you're doing and stuff, it's like 8 o'clock. And that's if the sun even comes up all day.
Yeah, exactly. It's raining, it's overcast. So that's like a natural 16-8 window that people were eating all the time back in the day.
Yeah. So we're just going to... define it as a 12-hour feeding fasting window to one meal a day, which would basically be 24 hours fasted if you're eating that meal same time every day. Right now, I'm doing a one meal a day protocol just because I want to and I like it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think you can't exercise while fasting, today I'm going to run for 2 hours. However far I can get in 2 hours, that's what I'm going to do. If you think you need food to do that run, like, I've been doing so many sprints and just exercises fasted, so is that telling me that I would be able to run 10 times further? Because I really don't think I can run for 20 hours straight.
No.
Like, that's just ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. But that is something we were into. That is a struggle we have with some people. They just assume, I mean, because I guess it's been pounded into their heads for years that you need carbohydrates to train, that you can't train fasted. You need fuel.
I mean, that's all I learned in school was you need carbs for this, carbs for that, carbs for that. And, well, for one, that's partially true, but your body can store it. You don't need to be consuming that stuff all the time.
You don't. Mm-hmm. And trust me, nobody out there, unless you're a hyper athlete, is working out enough to need really that many extra carbs for your workouts. If you're just an average Joe Blow lifting weights, someone like me, honestly, I work out in the morning fasted every day, and I have more than enough energy to lift weights, to do cardio, no problem.
Yeah, I mean, the only time you really need, like, to be doing that is if you're doing maybe a marathon. You're probably going to need to have some sort of carbs at some point along the race. Or maybe you're doing an Ironman triathlete where you're running a marathon, biking, I think it's like 50 miles, and swimming a few miles. Yeah, you're probably going to need some carbs at some point of that.
I don't know. That one guy, I'm not going to remember his name now, but he ran a 100-mile marathon fasted.
100
miles.
That's impressive.
They're out there. There are people who do these type of extreme events and don't have any carbs.
Yeah. I know, like, if you're really trying to do that, you want to be able to tap into your fat because that's going to be
a little bit of fuel source. Oh, he's a great fat burner. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Great fat burner.
All right. So what can you eat when you're fasting?
Yeah, that's a good question. Really, the big thing is water. Stay hydrated. You can drink as much water as you want. Personally, when I do fast, I start every fast in the morning and then in the evening with a salt shot. So it's pretty much just a glass of water with a teaspoon of salt in it. And I use Redmond's Real Salt because it's a mixture of just sodium and chloride, but also a bunch of trace minerals, so magnesium, potassium, even iron, things like that. And you can drink that as much as you like throughout a fast.
You really should be drinking as much as you want to, especially because that water, it's going to fill up your stomach. And it's going to kind of trick your brain into not being hungry. So sometimes you're hungry. You're not really hungry. It's just you're misinterpreting your own signals. And you're actually thirsty. So that'll kind of keep some of that at bay. And then also that salt will also keep those hunger cues at bay as well. A lot of people think like, hey, I broke my fast because I ate this. You broke your fast with that. It's not a light switch. It's a spectrum. Because the whole benefit is just keeping insulin as low as possible. So you don't want to have an insulin spike. So as long as you're not consuming anything that's going to give you a gigantic insulin spike, you're still on that fasting spectrum. So something like bone broth, there's about 40 to 50 calories depending on how much you're consuming of it. So like technically, I guess that's breaking your fast. But if you have a cup of bone broth, which is full of salt, full of other minerals, full of water as well, and you're able to go another 5 hours fasted, I think the pros definitely outweigh the cons.
Yes, it's worth it. I agree. The thing you want to avoid eating on any sort of fast is something like we talked about earlier that's going to have an insulin response, and that's going to come from sugar. No sugar, and even what we mentioned is no artificial sweeteners. Because artificial sweeteners, even though they technically have no calories, so some people might assume that they're okay to have on a fast, they're still going to provoke an insulin response, which will negatively affect your fast.
And then another one is coffee or tea, just, you know, those caffeine beverages. As long as it's strictly coffee or tea, just keep it to like one cup, maybe two if you absolutely need it, if it's going to help you extend a couple more hours. There are some like trace amounts of carbs in coffee and tea, so you might have a little bit of an insulin response to those. But especially with coffee, well, actually, coffee and tea, they're both together. Mm-hmm. They're full of antioxidants, so you're getting a lot of benefits from that. And then they also increase your fat metabolism. So one thing that I do, especially before like a very good fasted workout, is I'll make sure I have some coffee. It gives me that nice little pick-me-up, give me that energy boost. And then it's making me tap in my fat stores even better.
Yep, that's great. Yeah, I take caffeine pre-workout as well.
What should you eat during your feeding window, during that 8 hours that you are eating?
Yeah, if you want to really take advantage of intermittent fasting, what you really want to do is be a good fat burner. And how you do that, you become fat adapted. And you do that by just consuming a natural, low-carb, high-fat diet. Something we recommend that almost every human on the planet should do. It's what our bodies are designed to do, is low-carb, high-fat. If you do that, you'll become fat adapted, and you'll be able to better tap into your body fat stores throughout the fast.
Yeah, just make it so much easier. Because your body can tap into fat, so it's not really going to be starving for energy. But if you're not fat adapted and you're just a carb burner, your body's not really going to have access to a ton of carbs. We can only store a very limited amount. So you're just going to be hungry and just miserable all day long. So make that fasting time so much harder and just miserable. Unlike For me and you, it's just natural. Like, I don't want to eat all day. No. Like, I like having freedom and free time to do other things instead of having to cook the second I wake up and, like, cook or, like, put away the dishes from dinner and then go to bed.
And, like, consciously think about when's my next meal.
Oh, no, 2 hours ago.
Gotta eat, yeah.
Like, if that was my life, I would just live in the kitchen just cooking all day, every day. Like, that would be insane.
Yeah, and actually, when I recently did the little cut for Thanksgiving, I was really diligent with my meal timing. And that was the hardest part. Well, actually, shit, there was a few hard parts. But having to eat so frequently and so often was the hardest part. Because normally, you just have one or two big meals a day, and you're done. Like, you have one meal a day, you don't have to think about it. Me, I was spacing out my protein over, like, 8 hours. And I was like, this sucks. Like, it's not fun.
Yeah, I don't even do that much meal prepping anymore. Because it's like, if I have to cook one time a day.
Easy.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal. And also, now that I'm doing that, I cook so much better meals. Because, like, oh, hey. I have a lot of free time. If all I'm going to do is one meal, I'll spend a lot more energy in it, make sure that it tastes a lot better, and, you know, all those other things.
Looks good, smells good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That also might have something to do with, I've been watching a lot of cooking shows.
Yeah, so inspiration.
That might be a little bit of it as well.
Yeah, maybe.
But you can still get the benefits. You can still lose a lot of fat if you are on a high carb diet. But why would you do this? Like, it doesn't really make too much sense to me. I mean, again, like, if you are a top-level athlete, you know, you're a basketball player, and you are expending a ton of energy, especially carbs, during that type of exercise, I guess it makes sense, but still, I think everybody should be low-carb, high-fat, and just raise those carbs just to match that energy expenditure, and that's it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people out there who don't think they can intermittent fast because they realize, you know, 3 hours after breakfast, they're starving. They don't realize they're actually not hungry. Their body isn't in need of nourishment. They're just on this insulin cycle of high blood sugar, low blood sugar, and you're honestly just metabolically compromised. It's not that you can't go a long time without food. You just need to break that cycle. And you break that cycle by eating low carb, high fat. Once you do that, you'll realize the doors will be open. You'll see the light, and you'll be like, oh, I can go days without eating. It happens naturally.
Yeah, and we're seeing low-carb, high-fat. I mean, like, you could really do a ketogenic diet, which would be, like, the very best way, because that means you're burning fat all day, every day. But just doing this intermittent fasting should put you in a state of ketosis, at least during your fasted time. So it might not be a full ketogenic diet, but at least be a cyclical ketogenic diet.
And that's better than nothing.
I'm sure everybody by now has heard of the ketogenic diet. I don't think there's that many people, unless you've been out of the country for the last couple of years, that doesn't know about it. And just how effective it is on everything.
Everything. Yeah. God, yeah, it is. It is, man. It's powerful stuff.
So let's just talk about one of the first effects. I mean, this is going to be what's going to apply to most people. They're going to do this type of diet because they want to lose fat.
That's true. That is the goal. Most people look in the mirror these days and they're not happy with it. That's why they start these diets. And intermittent fasting is a great way to promote fat loss, because what intermittent fasting does is it'll lower your insulin levels. And if you don't know what insulin is, don't worry about it. Just think of it as our body's hormone. It's a storage hormone. So any sugar in our blood, any fat in our blood, it stores it as body fat. So if you want to actually burn body fat, we need to get insulin lower. And how do we do that? Simply don't eat.
Yeah, and then we're talking about fat loss and not weight loss. And that's because when insulin levels are low, growth hormone is going to be high. And what that's going to do is it's going to allow your body to spare the muscle, which is ideal. Nobody wants to lose muscle. And then also, once you do eat again and your growth hormone is higher, now you're going to, guess what? You're going to grow muscle and other types of tissue that your body needs to. So maybe you're not going to lose weight on this type of protocol, but you're definitely going to, if you're making any gains, it's going to be lean mass and you're going to lose fat mass. Which is ideal. That's what everybody really wants.
Exactly. That's what everyone wants. And that's actually been shown in studies. I'll link it. I'll put it in the show notes. I'll put it on the website. But there's been studies comparing intermittent fasting with calorie restrictions. So just think of a normal diet, the eat less, move more diet. And they've shown to lose similar amount of total weight. But the people doing intermittent fasting lose more fat and less muscle. And it's what you want. Who does a diet to lose muscle? Nobody.
It's going to be counterintuitive, because now you're, instead of being maybe just fat, now you're going to be skinny fat. And skinny fat really isn't that attractive.
No, no one likes that. It's these skinny arms and big bellies, no.
And then also, like, with muscle, it's a very metabolically active tissue and requires a lot of energy. So you're burning more energy if you have more muscle. Yes. So if you're losing muscle, you're going to be losing your ability to burn all those extra calories. So you're just killing yourself both ways.
Yeah, and having a little extra muscle is like a, I call it like a glucose sink. So it kind of gives, whenever you have these shitty days, it gives somewhere for that glucose to go. So even though I feel super fat right now, people look at me like, hey, you look good, man. You've been training. I'm like, nah, bro. But the sugar just goes somewhere. It gives, instead of being stored as body fat, it'll just be stored in your muscles.
And the people that can get away with having a very high carbohydrate diet for a few years or, you know, are usually athletes who have a lot of muscle. So that will be able to make up, you'll be able to soak up all those extra carbohydrates. Do you want those extra carbohydrates? No, they're not necessary and they're doing other damages to your body. But it just from an appearance wise, your body can soak up so much more sugar because that's where we store sugar. It's either in the liver or in the muscle. So now you have an extra place to put it.
Exactly. And I guess people that are most affected by blood sugar and all these type of things are diabetics. And intermittent fasting has been shown to help reverse diabetes. Because people think diabetes is the disease of sugar. Because that's how we measure it. We measure our blood sugars. If your blood sugar is elevated constantly, then you'll be diagnosed as diabetic. But that's not true. Almost like we talked about earlier with cancer being, they're like, oh, chromosomes are damaged, so it's a disease of chromosomes. No, it's not. It's a disease of mitochondria. Same thing with diabetes. It's not a disease of sugar. It's a disease of too much insulin. A term called hyperinsulinemia. So when your insulin is constantly elevated by the consumption of carbohydrates throughout the day, all day, every day, for 20, 30, 40 years, eventually your cells will become insulin resistant. Once that happens, your pancreas can no longer produce enough insulin to keep your blood sugar in check. Then your blood sugar raises. But trust me, the damage is done. Your insulin's been elevated for years. Now it just has a sign that we can actually test for in blood sugar.
Yeah, your pancreas is just working overtime 7 days a week for the last 30 years.
It's finally like, bro, give me a break.
Yeah. And you know what? It's basically just like, you know what? F this job. I'm out. That's basically what's happening. It's like, you've worked me to the bone. Like, I can't deal with this anymore.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
And then also those cells, like, they become insulin resistant because, like, there's just too much insulin, too much insulin. Give me a break.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
yeah.
I don't want you anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like a clingy girlfriend or a clingy boyfriend. It's like, bro, do your own thing. Make some friends.
Give me a break, all right?
Like, give me a break. I'm trying to play Call of Duty. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so if you're diabetic, you're out there, or anybody you know maybe pre-diabetic, I hate that term, but you know that people use it, getting on some sort of intermittent fasting protocol can help you curb those symptoms and honestly reverse diabetes. You can put diabetes in remission 100%. Don't let anyone else tell you different.
I know it's crazy that they say that diabetes is uncurable.
Permanent.
But no, it's not. I mean, like basically like malaria. If I get bit by a mosquito, I get malaria. I can get it cured. And you know what? If I get bit by another mosquito with malaria, I'm going to get malaria again.
Yes.
So does that mean I was never cured in the first place?
That I love that.
Like, no. Like, yes, you can cure it. And the same thing with diabetes. If you stop eating sugar, you go on a ketogenic diet, or just basically just do anything that's going to lower your insulin low enough to make you tap into your fat stores to keep you alive, you just reversed it. Now you don't need insulin, metformin, berberine, any of those blood sugar lowering chemicals.
Yep. That's great. Did you think of that?
I stole it from a podcast.
Oh, did you? That's great. I was
like, I would credit them if I knew who it was, but I listened to way too many podcasts.
Okay. I love that. I'm totally stealing that. Yeah, that's great. But that's you couldn't put it any better than that.
Yeah. Thank you to whoever I stole that from.
Yeah, sorry.
So another great benefit of intermittent fasting is autophagy. And autophagy just means that you're breaking down like old damaged proteins, the organelles of cells, you're just the old damaged parts that are in the cells, you're breaking those down into amino acids, and then your body's gonna figure out what to do with that. So either it's gonna send those amino acids to the liver and convert that into glucose, gluconeogenesis, or you can convert those into glucose in the citric acid cycle, also known as a Krebs cycle, TCA cycle, it's probably got a million different names.
Yeah.
Or you know what amino acids do? You build them together and you have new proteins. So there's a lot of different uses and your body is smart enough to figure out what to do with it.
Yeah, when we talk about autophagy, it's not like those new gains you just made in the gym like 6 months ago, you know, your biceps an inch bigger. Your body isn't going after those newly formed healthy proteins, those newly formed healthy mitochondria, those organelles that are actually functioning properly. It goes through and it's like, all right, which one of you motherfuckers suck? Which one is broken? Which one is sick? And then it takes those. It's perfectly healthy.
So the best analogy I have for this, and this one I'll give credit to Jason Fung, because I do remember he said
good,
this.
Good,
good. So let's say that you're stuck in a house for a while, you're snowed in, and you're freezing, and you ran out of firewood. Are you going to go chop up your brand new sofa for firewood? No, you're not. You're going to find that rickety chair in the corner that nobody sits in, and if you do sit in it, it's going to fall apart. You're going to go to that first. You're gonna break down your old damaged furniture, throw that in the fire before you start breaking down your bed, your cabinets, you know, all these brand new, perfectly fine functioning furniture.
That's great. I love that. That's so true. Now, eventually, if you don't eat for about 6 months, guess what? The couch is gone. The TV's gone. Everything's gone. But that's not what we're talking about. In these short-term bouts, you're only going after the stuff that's not working right.
Yeah, trust me. You got a lot of damaged, broken-down furniture in your house. Like, you'll have enough.
You'll have enough.
Especially if you're doing an intermittent fasting. You're not going to be starving to death after not eating for 12 hours or 16 hours.
Yeah, you'll be perfectly fine. And it's actually, doing research on this podcast made me look and actually, what's the trigger for autophagy? I was like, what is actually going on there? So what's going on is insulin is low, and insulin kind of has a yin and yang relationship with another hormone called glucagon. So insulin brings sugar down, glucagon raises sugar up. So when insulin is low, glucagon is high. So when glucagon is high, it triggers autophagy by reducing the acetyl-CoA pool intracellularly. And intracellular acetyl-CoA, God, that's a hard word. Say those two fucking words back to back.
Sounds like you're reading Dr. Seuss right now.
Intracellular acetyl-CoA, that's kind of the starting point for all of our metabolism. So glucose goes there, fat goes there, protein goes there. It gets turned into acetyl-CoA, and then it can get ran through the citric acid cycle to produce energy. So once that pool gets depleted, that's a signal to the cell that, hey, we need to start hijacking some other nutrients from these shitty organelles, aka autophagy.
Yeah, and that's right there. That's when your body is signaling, hey, gluconeogenesis, we need some glucose, break down these old organelles, those proteins. And honestly, like, all the benefits of this are insulin being low and the benefits of you fixing your mitochondria. If your mitochondria get messed up, I don't know exactly how it's going to affect you, but it could be cancer, it could be heart disease, diabetes,
high blood pressure.
Yeah, I mean, like, these are all connected, and they're all connected with insulin. Insulin's not the enemy all the time, but if it's high all the time, yeah, that's definitely the enemy.
Oh, you don't want that. Yeah. That is the number one killer. We talked about that crazy animal who hunts during the day and hunts during the night. That's insulin.
Yeah.
That bitch is always ready to fight.
Just to let you know, insulin is so powerful that it takes 5 other hormones to counteract it.
Like, really?
So, okay, when insulin is low, glucagon is high. Mm-hmm. When insulin is low, growth hormone is high. Mm-hmm. There's 3 other ones that I cannot remember right now because those are the only 2 that are relevant to this podcast.
Got it.
But there's at least 5 that we know about, and mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet once we do more research into this, mm-hmm. maybe it's going to be 10 hormones. Like, insulin is a very, very powerful hormone.
Well, I know insulin is like the master hormone. I know it's been around for over 1 billion years, and that makes perfect sense because early cells, and actually I learned about this. Shit, I don't want to talk about this, but I just read a whole chapter on the history of the eukaryotic cell. It'll make your head spin a little bit. It was a little over my head, but it kind of makes me... It's such a unique thing being eukaryotes, but that's besides the point. I don't want to talk about it. But we had to use sugar for fuel from day one. Once we actually started fermenting things, that's glucose. So what's a hormone that messes with glucose? Insulin. So insulin's been there since day one. So it's kind of like that guy at work who's been there for 30 years. He gets every holiday off. He shows up when he wants to. He leaves when he wants to. He knows he's not going to get fired because he's been there since day one. So he's doing whatever he wants. And that's insulin.
So another effect of intermittent fasting that's not talked about very much is just how much smarter you feel. Like, how does it affect your brain? So we've talked about with insulin being low, your body has to start converting body fat into ketones. So some people are just straight drinking exogenous ketones for just that added mental clarity. You can do that. They're expensive. Or you can just fast, which is free, and get the same damn benefits.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but I like my money to stay in my pocket. So I'm not really trying to go buy those sets of pills or those drinks for like $50. Like, that stuff is crazy
expensive. It is really expensive.
Especially now that keto is getting like super trendy. That sounds really expensive.
But do you think it's expensive because keto is trendy, or literally the process of making ketos is expensive? Like, I wonder what the margins are.
Oh, I'm sure that stuff's probably really cheap to produce.
So they're just making a killing.
Yeah. Why wouldn't they be?
Well, that's true. I mean, I just, maybe I'm thinking everyone in the keto community should be like altruistic, you know, and making no money off it, but who knows?
And then there's not a ton of research, but there is more and more emerging every day. So if you do have a concussion, some sort of traumatic brain injury, ketones right then and there, like seconds after that injury, are showing a lot of benefits. And that's partially because when your body, when any part of your body is breaking down glucose and energy, you're converting it, or you're creating a lot of free radicals. Ketones are a much cleaner fuel source. So you want your brain running off of ketones and not glucose, especially at that time. So if you are, you're playing football, you're going to be pretty low on all sorts of energy. So your brain is most likely going to be using a lot of glucose, especially if you're doing some sort of physical activity like that. You need to be using a lot of energy. So you want your body to be using the cleanest energy source possible, especially if you have some sort of traumatic brain injury. So not only are ketones beneficial for that, then it's also beneficial to be on a ketogenic diet after that traumatic brain injury for at least the next couple of weeks until your brain is fully healed.
Yeah, just that recovery phase. Ketones are so therapeutic.
And if you want to go back in time, like...
But there's... I want to prime this up. There's a common misconception, especially around the bro community in the gym. Like, oh, if you don't eat, you're going to go in starvation mode. Your metabolism is going to shut down. You're going to be tired and weak. What do we say to that?
All right. Well, that might be partially true if you are eating 500 grams of carbs every day. You know, you are going to feel like shit if you stop eating those carbs, because your body just isn't producing those ketones because it doesn't know how.
Yeah.
But if you're a metabolically healthy person, or you just, you wait out those hunger cues and your body, you force your body to produce ketones, your body's not going to die. No, your body doesn't want to die. If your body wanted to die, those genes would have died off hundreds of thousands of years ago. Like, we're all the most advanced humans possible.
But yeah, the gym bro argument is if you don't eat, you're going to store everything as fat, and you're going to get fat.
Your body's not dumb. Your body's not going to use... I mean, if you're storing all that fat, that means that your body has to be using muscle for energy. Because if you don't have any carbs, that's the only other source.
It's only three choices.
Yeah, your body's not stupid enough to just be like, oh, hey, I know there's a big fuel tank, like, right there. But you know what? Let me just chop up my sofa and throw that in the fireplace instead of all this great firewood that I have over here. Like, your body's not dumb. Like, fat is used for energy. So it's going to use it as energy. It's, proteins are supposed to be building blocks. They're not supposed to be used as energy. They'll use it as energy in a pinch if it absolutely has to, but it doesn't want to do that. So your body's not going to make itself weaker just because it doesn't have energy. No, there's energy, and it'll tap into those energy sources. So just think of this like back in the hunter-gatherer days. So you're out hunting, you don't get a kill. So you don't eat that day. You don't get any sort of energy. What do you think is going to happen the next day? Do you think your body is going to make you, it's going to eat your muscle away, so now you're weaker, and now you also don't have that much fuel, so you're going to be dumber? No, that wouldn't make any sense, because how the hell would you hunt the next day? What it does is it taps into your body fat. Your ketone levels are going to rise. Your brain loves ketones. I cannot say this enough. And so what happens with that is you're going to be smarter. You're going to be sharper. All your senses are going to be more advanced so you can get that kill. And you know, if it doesn't happen that second day, that third day, your ketone levels are going to be even higher. Your growth hormone is going to be high this entire time as well, using a muscle sparing effect. So you're not going to be eating that much muscle. And if you do eat any of that muscle, the growth hormone is going to be high. The second you eat another meal, all that stuff's going to be right back there. So you don't have to worry about losing any muscle over time. And so you're going to keep doing that. Eventually, if you don't eat for 30 days, yeah, you're probably going to die.
Sorry, you didn't make it.
Yeah, you're probably going to start seeing some effects. But we're just talking a day or two. I mean, this podcast is intermittent fasting. Like, you're not going to run out of all these stores.
And if you think about, I'm personally not a hunter, but I've watched a few hunting shows, so maybe I know. But if you are out there, you understand how hard it is to hunt. I'm sure there's plenty of times people go out there to hunt and they come back empty-handed. is not a give me, especially when you're hunting with fucking sticks and rocks. You know, we didn't have high power rifles back in the day.
Yeah, we're also not about to chase anything down or
a short period at least.
Yeah, or like catch it with our bare hands and just kill it. Like, no, we need to outsmart our prey. And that's what has always happened. Like, we have big brains. We're really, really smart. That's why we're at the top of the food chain, mm-hmm. despite not having very many physical advantages.
Yep.
Like, I don't even know if I could take, like, one raccoon in a fight that's, like, 1/5 my size. Those things got claws. Those things got teeth. Like, that. Maybe yeah. I would survive, but probably not for very long.
Oh, it'd suck.
Like, yeah. I'd probably get some wounds. I might get affected.
Infection. Yeah. No, Brittany has a dog. My sister has a dog. She has a pit bull. And I always think, man, if this dog, it's big. And I was like, if this dog really wanted to, it could fuck up this whole house. And I was like, I don't think I could stop it, you know?
And you probably weigh at least twice as much, three times.
At least.
Yeah, three times as much. Like, we're not very physically intimidating. We don't got claws. We don't have strong jaws or, like, super sharp teeth. But we're great hunters.
Yeah, so if that dog gets loose, I'm using my brain and I'm hiding in a room. That's it.
So Silicon Valley is the center of the technical revolution that's going on right now. Some of the smartest people in the world live there and work there. Silicon Valley CEOs are starting to use fasting as a tool to increase their mental focus and their work performance. So it works two ways. One, if you're not eating, you have all this extra free time. And then two, if your ketone levels are increasing over time, you're smarter. So now you're able to tackle big projects. You have all this extra free time. You also don't have the distraction of food. And you have so much more mental clarity by having all that advanced ketones. So, like, intermittent fasting has so many benefits. It goes beyond just the ones that we talked about. Do you want to talk about some of the extra benefits?
Yeah, I think one of the big benefits is just what you touched on. It's more freedom. Like, literally, I guess right now my routines recently have been a little more regimented with actual meal timing and having to get food in. But prior to this, when I'm just doing my normal thing, similar to what you're doing now, you don't think about when you're going to eat. You don't have to wake up an hour before you go to work because, oh, I need to get breakfast in. You don't worry about on the way home, oh, I need to stop by McDonald's, I need to stop by Starbucks and get this, because you don't have to worry about eating. That freedom, it's a great feeling. Once you actually feel it, it's awesome.
Yeah, and honestly, it's like, I don't even see fast food places while I'm driving by them anymore because I'm just not thinking about food. Like, honestly, I ate so much more fast food when I was just eating a traditional standard American diet, that sad diet. Like, I'm hungry, all I see is food, 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 and you know what? Eventually, I'm going to give in. Even if I don't want to eat fast food, nobody's willpower is 100% strong enough to just resist that all the time.
Shit, I'm Mr. Willpower. My shit ran out.
Yeah, and honestly, like, one thing that we recommend for most of our clients, I recommend everybody do this at least one time, is just go one single calendar day without eating, just so you can experience that those hunger cues come and then they go without you eating. It just gives you so much more power, just mental power over what you're eating and just your food hunger cues. Like, you just realize, like, oh, hey, you know what? Maybe I wasn't hungry. Maybe it was just I'm either used to eating that time of day, something along those lines. I agree. Like, just that control over appetite and hunger is such a great benefit.
Such a great benefit. I think that's a pretty good coverage on intermittent fasting.
Yeah, there's so many more benefits that we can get into. We could also get into, like, extended fasting, but we'll save that for another podcast. Intermittent fasting is just fasting for, like, a day. Extended fasting is going to be over 24 hours.
And we're both a fan of that.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I've done quite a few. I think we recorded the first couple podcasts. I was doing extended fast.
I think so, too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's just, you know, the benefits that you're getting from this intermittent fasting, double it, triple it. That's the benefits you're getting from an extended fast.
Yeah, extended fasts are great. We'll talk about that eventually at some point.
Yeah, it's a little bit more advanced. Like, if you're just starting off, if you can intermittent fast, then you can do a 36-hour fast, and then you can do a 72. You don't just go from eating all day every day to a 72-hour or even like a 5-day fast. I mean, if you can do that, good on you.
It'll suck.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is possible. Yeah. I did recommend that. Back in the day, I don't even know if this is a funny story or not, but somebody came to me, this was years ago, and I guess I've always been kind of the nutrition guy, the training guy around my friends and families, And he's like, you know, I really want to go low carb. He was kind of heavy set. And I want to try keto. And I was like, you know what? And this guy, I knew he wasn't serious. I knew he really didn't care. But I was like, if you really want to do it, don't eat for 3 days. Like, just don't. I was like, you want to be in keto? That's the quickest way to do it. I think it was like a Sunday. I was like, you'll be keto by Wednesday. He's like, all right, I'm going to do it. He says he did. I don't know if I believe him or not, but he said he did. So I have recommended that to somebody before.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, from a what's the healthiest, the best advice you could possibly give, that is the very best advice you could possibly give.
Don't eat.
But, I mean, it's fucking difficult.
It sucks. I'm sure
it's not the easiest thing to... I mean, if you have the willpower and you can do it, good on you. I mean, that's definitely the best way to do it. But, like, yeah, it's hard.
It's hard.
I don't think there's that many people that could really do that.
Me either. Do you have a tip of the week this week?
I do have a tip of the week this week. So, parents, put your kids to bed for this one. Actually, you know what? I'm really sorry. That is a very, very poor choice of words for this this particular tip of the week. Earmuffs, kids, for this one. So, this one has to do with sleep. I just finished reading Sleep Smarter by Sean Stevenson. It's a great book. Highly recommend it. It's full of the benefits of sleep, and then it just gets through a lot of the simple, easy-to-do tips you can do to improve your sleep. Really easy to understand. So just bear with me. There's going to be quite a few tips coming in the next few weeks all regarding sleep.
That's good.
So this one has to do with what you do in your bedroom. So there's two things that your bed should be used for, and only two things. I'm pretty sure everybody can figure out what that is. Mm-hmm. Sex and sleep. I just want to talk about how connected those two are. So if you're getting good levels of sleep, what happens when you're sleeping? Your body's repairing itself. It's restoring all your hormones to its proper levels. So your sex hormones are going to be part of that. So good sleep means you're going to have your testosterone is going to be high, which it should be. Your estrogen levels are going to be at their proper state. All those places are going to be high. If you have low testosterone, you're going to have low sex drive. You might have even have erectile dysfunction. So you want great sleep to have those proper hormones, have high sex drive. And you know what? Having great sex right before sleep will help you have great sleep. So what happens with sleep? Your body releases oxytocin and a bunch of other endorphins, feel-good hormones. What that's going to do is really going to lower your cortisol. High cortisol is good in the morning, but is horrible at night, and it will keep you awake. And it could also, if you're waking up in the middle of the night, it probably has something to do with cortisol. So you really want to... So the effect on cortisol is great. Another effect of sex is serotonin. Serotonin is a precursor to melatonin. Melatonin is really what keeps you into deep sleep. Serotonin also has an effect on keeping you in deep sleep. Deep sleep is where all the benefits of sleep really happen at. If you're just staying in the first couple stages of sleep, yeah, you're getting a couple benefits, but you're not really being at that full restoration state. So you really want to be in that deepest state possible. And just be a good partner, put some effort in, put some like physical work in, and then you know what? You're going to be tired from that physical exertion, mm-hmm. and that will also help you sleep. And then you get that great night's sleep, your testosterone level is going to be high when you wake up, and you know what? You're going to want to have sex the next day. It's a great little cycle. And if you know what? If you break that cycle, you get shitty sleep, low sex drive, you're probably not going to have sex, and it's probably going to lead to another night as shitty sleep. So just do yourself a favor and your partner a favor and just implement that little tool.
That's a great tip. It's all connected. Just like everything else. Everything works in unison. When everything's lined up right, you get so many benefits on so many different levels. All right. So that's another podcast in the books. That was episode 27. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can find us at tntwellnessandnutrition.com. You can also find us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Feel free to reach out.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe to our podcast. We just love all the helpful tips, and that's how new people can come and find us. Thank you for listening. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.